Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka. Today is Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel, and this is Raven News. Trial has been set for next September in the wrongful death case filed by the widow of a slain Hoonah police officer. Haley Tokuoka alleges negligence in the death of Matthew Tokuoka by the city of Hoonah and police officer Tony Wallace. Hoonah resident John Marvin Jr. was convicted in the 2010 shooting deaths of both Matthew Tokuoka and Wallace and is serving consecutive 99-year prison terms. The lawsuit, among other things, alleges negligent training and supervision and breach of contract over benefits. The city of Hoonah disputes the claims and has asked the suit to be dismissed. The tentative September 16th trial date was set during a brief court hearing yesterday in Juneau. An orphaned black bear cub who recently became famous in the virtual world is settling into her new home in the real world. Over 300,000 people viewed Smokey's story on Facebook when she was captured 2 weeks ago in Seward. Now, a bear habitat in Sitka is writing her next chapter. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
I'm at Sitka's Fortress of the Bear, following Les Kinnear into a dark shipping container.
Careful coming out. It's probably a little slippery.
Inside, light shines through just a few holes. It's dim and warm, and at the back is a metal mesh fence. Behind that fence is another wire enclosure, with a thick bed of straw and a dog crate in the corner. And poking her head out of the crate...
Hi, little girl!
...is Smokey the Bear, the 9-month-old bear cub who is the fortress's newest and youngest resident. Kinnear runs the Fortress of the Bear with his wife, Evie. He settles down in the straw, holding a bucket of apple bits and dog kibble. And this... ...is the sound of the bear cub eating out of his hand.
The fun part is teaching her to... that there's enough food for her now, that she does not have to panic and... eat everything at once, because there will be food, and more food, and lots of it. So we come in here a couple times a day, 3-4 times a day, in fact, and sit in here and work with her.
Little Smokey is taking every bite as fast as he will hand it to her. She's the size of a spaniel with a thick coat that makes her look much bigger than her 25 pounds. Her face is all snout.
Yeah, if you shaved her, she'd look like a chihuahua. She has a lot of fur on her.
The cub was captured in Seward, where staff at the Spring Creek Correctional Center found her in the space used for smoking breaks, hence her name, which Kinnear says she'll be keeping.
And they say she was eating cigarette butts and candy wrappers off the floor before she was captured. Her mother had been dead several days, and they scheduled to kill her.
The bear cub was a minor internet sensation after an organization called Angels for Animals posted a photo of her on their Facebook page, along with contact information for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Angels for Animals says the post reached 300,000 people, and the Department of Fish and Game was inundated with messages begging them not to euthanize the cub. The Kinnears volunteered to take Smokey, and it's a big undertaking. Now that she's here for life. She can't be released back into the wild, and black bears can live up to 20 years in captivity, Kinnear says. This winter, the fortress will have to build a new, separate enclosure to house her. The existing two structures house 5 brown bears and wouldn't be safe or big enough. Kinnear expects to get a second black bear cub from Fish and Game soon to keep her company. For now, in her temporary digs, Smokey has her head entirely inside the bucket, finishing off the apple and kibble.
She's got her whole head in that can.
Yeah. Here you go, kid. Hey, that's good. Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's the last of it. Okay.
Reporting for KCAW, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Cyberbullying has become a problem in Petersburg. According to the school district, there have been several cases of local children receiving abusive messages from their peers or posting them on popular social networking sites. Cyberbullying is common worldwide, and Petersburg is no exception. The district has an anti-bullying policy, and school officials say they are trying to address the online bullying issue. However, their authority is limited to school grounds and school-sponsored activities, while cyberbullying is not. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
We believe it's here. We believe it's a state and a national illness phenomenon, and we are going to be proactive in making sure kids are safe.
District Superintendent Rob Thomason says that in a school survey early last February, 15% of local students reported being bullied over the internet.
Since that time, we've had youngsters come forward with proof and evidence, printouts as it were, of cyberbullying incidents, and we've been trying to react to those.
The issue has become prominent in the national news in the past several years, with reports of online harassment leading to teen suicides. Most recently in Florida, police arrested two girls who allegedly cyberbullied a 12-year-old peer before she took her own life. While it's not come to that in Petersburg, Thomason says his staff has seen several impacts among kids who've reported being cyberbullied.
Fear, anxiety, a lot of anxiety, sleeplessness, because they're laying awake thinking about these things. Again, kids cannot deal with this kind of stuff. And powerlessness, and that's where youngsters begin to think about doing harmful things, when they get into those emotions, fear, anxiety, and powerlessness.
The district has an anti-bullying and harassment policy that includes language on cyberbullying. According to Thomason, administrators will enforce this policy when they learn about a cyberbullying incident on campus, just like any other type of bullying. However, as he points out, cyberbullying is not limited to campus, so it's not as simple as just enforcing school policy.
I believe that we have a very safe school. That doesn't mean that one youngster can't do something to another youngster at some point in time. That it's a human nature thing. But, and I don't have a percentage, but I would wager that the majority of this kind of texting and stuff happens outside of school or during lunch when they're off campus, only because the other parts of the time the kids are in the classes and we're teaching and they're learning and we know what they're doing. So it's a hard call.
District Technology Coordinator John Clute Painter says local cases have so far involved what he calls off-the-mainline sites where users can post anonymously. They include AskFM, Instagram, Vine, and others. According to Clute Painter, the school can block problem sites, at least on the campus network.
Many of these sites, all the ones that we find out about, that are causing students issues, you know, whether they come to us and they report, we do filter those out under the Child Internet Protection Act and in our internet filter. So if they happen to be using those outside the school day, obviously we can't filter that, but within our school environment, these sites are filtered and blocked.
However, the district cannot block cell service, of course, so students who have smartphones, and many of them do, can still access those sites on campus. The district has let Petersburg police know about the cyberbullying incidents. Chief Kelly Swihart says right now the department does not believe the behavior rises to the level of a criminal offense, one that would kick off an investigation.
But the school is keeping us in the loop. They're keeping us up to speed on the information as they get it, and we're trying to partner with them to help solve the problem.
Swihart says there are no cyberbullying statutes on the books in Alaska. Such behavior can sometimes rise to the level of harassment or stalking under state law, according to Swihart. But he says in general it does not. Still, he sees it as a serious concern.
You know, it really hinders people's ability to lead a peaceful, stress-free life. And I don't think that some people really realize the stress they inflict on folks when they're engaging in these cyberbullying activities.
Online bullying and harassment can be particularly insidious since postings can remain in cyberspace in perpetuity and spread from site to site. And unlike the schoolhouse bullying of decades past, the abuse does not stop at a student's front door.
I could be sitting at home as a teen on the weekend and be bullied on Facebook while in my pajamas, sitting in bed. And it's potentially harder to escape from.
Jay Stanton Greger is co-owner of True North Counseling and Consultation in Petersburg, where he's counseled kids who've experienced online bullying. Stanton Greger says they should not have to carry it on their own.
Maybe tell more of your peers, tell your family, tell adults, all of that. But I think even more importantly, I look to parents, meaning the parents of the kids who are actually doing some of the cyberbullying. I think the more involved parents are in terms of their kids' social media and social media access, the more you can control and limit some of these behaviors. Many parents have no idea, unfortunately, what their kids actually are doing with their phones online, etc. And by becoming more aware of that, whether it be from the bully or the bullied, the more involved parents are, the more kids feel supported.
That's a key message for school officials as well, and they're encouraging parent involvement through a newspaper ad, school website postings, and some upcoming meetings on digital literacy. The district's Clute Painter says his main concern is parents not knowing and not having the tools to respond to the problem at home.
And I think the digital literacy nights that we'll have soon to take a proactive effort on educating parents on here's an example of a contract you can have with your youngster. You know, here's some action plans. Here's what other parents have talked about that work in their family. And just staying involved, you know, parents, you know, knowing that these devices are with them all the time, 24/7, and what's on those devices, and knowing they're not just games, but actually portals to other social groups. And so I think that's really what we want to offer is support from the school district to help parents manage these tools.
The district's website includes links and resources to recognize and report cyberbullying, as well as information on some of the websites where it takes place. You can find it at pcsd.us. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alaska state legislators are scheduled to consider whether to allow Facebook access from legislative computers for legislative business. The Legislative Council, which is comprised of House and Senate members, is expected to take up the issue at a meeting Wednesday afternoon in Anchorage. It has proved a tough topic for lawmakers who have struggled to decide how to proceed after the council in 2011 approved a one-year trial for lawmakers, legislative press offices, and webmasters. The issue has come up since, including at a council meeting near the end of the last legislative session. With no clear consensus on a path forward and additional requests for access to the social media site by the Office of the Alaska Ombudsman, the Legislative Ethics Committee, and the Division of Legislative Audit. That's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. Stay tuned for National Public Radio.